Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Welcome to a special edition, a special weekend edition of the Daily Wrap-Up. This one will be a little bit longer than usual because there is quite a bit going on today, which is the very reason I wanted to do a show today specifically, a lot of it about what's going on in Syria today. So, and understand too that this show already was being manipulated before it even came live. The title, the image, things are being misrepresented by Twitter and YouTube. There's topics they don't want us talking about today, which is abundantly clear. Things like that should no longer be conspiracy theory topics, as we see people being actively censored, actively shut down, topics being suppressed, like what we're talking about today, whether that's Syria, Yemen, Israel, things they don't want us discussing. So be sure and get this out there and spread the word, because we're going to talk a lot about some pretty important stuff today. So let's get right into it. For the first article of the day, this one coming from a website that I wasn't much familiar with. It's freenations.net, which was shared with me by a couple of my viewers, as well as I saw in Israeli News Live, and was also shared by Vanessa Beely. This one entitled 200 British and U.S. Troops Trapped in Idlib. Interesting development here as we see this story continue to increase and come to a head in Idlib, as one side claims this is a rebel stronghold of freedom fighters and the other side says, no, this is a bunch of extremist terrorists that we have been trying to eradicate that you've been funding from our sovereign territory. I'm pretty sure you in the chat are very aware of how much evidence we have to support the latter. So sources on the ground in Syria have reported that 200 U.S. and British advisors and instructors to the Syrian opposition forces, otherwise known as extremists, terrorists, U.S.-backed jihadists, are trapped in Idlib. There are fanatic attempts by the United States and Britain to essentially ask Turkey or Russia by the borders there to help evacuate these troops. But Britain has essentially refused to cooperate with the Russians. The local opposition forces in Idlib include tens of thousands of extreme al-Qaeda-related elements like Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which we pointed out in the past, essentially a rebranded version of al-Nusra, of al-Qaeda. The U.S. continues to call for Russian and Syrian forces to hold off from attacking Idlib, even while we've pointed out numerous times that just last year, U.S. government special envoy in the region, Brett McGurk, called Idlib province, quote, the largest al-Qaeda safe haven since 9/11, tied directly, in fact, to the leader of al-Qaeda. He also admitted that the ridiculous Western policy of sending, quote, tens of thousands of tons of weapons, he says, and looking the other way as foreign fighters come into Syria, may not have been the best approach. Al-Qaeda has taken full advantage of it, and Idlib now is a huge problem. End quote. Directly from the State Department. These some 200 trapped British and U.S. instructors, as they're being called, more than likely have important weaponry and intelligence, and the U.K. only wants the Turks to, evacuate them from the airbase in Turkey. But yet, interestingly, Turkey has apparently refused. So as Israeli Live News points out, it's important to recognize here that a NATO ally and of these groups, of the United States and the UK, is refusing to help them to evacuate their troops. But Russia is saying, hey, I'm happy to help. And this is per the United States. They are saying, we will evacuate your troops. Of course, UK is refusing, which I find very, very revealing. This is what we're seeing now is the U.S. essentially begging Russia to help, even while the U.S. and the U.K., the representatives there and at the U.N., attack Russia on this absurdly farcical Salisbury poisoning psyop. But the British Army contacts are simply on the ground are simply refusing to cooperate with the Russians, apparently even if this means putting their own people in danger, I guess, to maintain its propaganda facade. Refusing to allow Russia to even be seen as the savior, I would imagine, or just not the villain, I guess, but willing to help even those lobbing false claims at them, which is Russia. Just recognize the dynamic here. One side willing to help even their enemies, while the other side's refusing to even accept help. Very, very childish dynamic here, which does tend to reveal who's in the right overall, but come to your own conclusions there. Russia has been warning for weeks of yet another false flag chemical weapons attack organized by the UK intelligence service founded White Helmets. And there are reports that Russia has the names of chemical weapons handling specialists among the British trapped in Idlib. This is likely one of the reasons why the British Army has refused to cooperate with the Russians, for fear of revealing the truth about what we've been saying for a very long time. But as we now know that there are U.S. and British forces on the ground there, this could really change the dynamic at play, and also calls back to something that Whitney Webb had written about a while back. Like I said just in the last show, that knowing that if we have, and like Altamp plays into this as well, knowing that we have actual personnel on the ground, not proxy forces, and something, if they carry out some kind of an attack, this could be a major escalation, and maybe that's exactly what they want. Another interesting story in this related topic, and something I waited on reporting on yesterday, because I'm glad I did for this very reason. This report, this is coming from Business Insider. This was largely a report from CNN. Russia reportedly warns that the U.S. that is prepared to attack key bases where dozens of U.S. troops are stationed. Also, this was reported on Israeli Live News. This is something that I reported on recently as well. The reality here is this is genuinely fake news. This is a gross misrepresentation of what's happening, obviously for a political reason. What Russia is ultimately saying is, look, hey, this is where we're going to annihilate these extremists on the ground. The ones that we've many times over proven is what they are, terrorists. And they're simply saying, this is where we're coming to take back sovereign Syrian territory, and warning the U.S. to get out of the way. If they wanted to hurt the U.S., they would just simply attack, saying, look, get out of the way. We're not trying to attack the United States. And instead, the U.S. has reportedly brought more troops into this area. So you can see how this is a gross misrepresentation of what's being said. Russia is not threatening to attack the United States. It's saying, please get out of the way so we can continue doing what you pretend to be doing, which is attack the extremists on the ground. Very revealing. Very revealing. Moving on to the next story. This one coming from RT.com, entitled, Terrorists and White Helmets Met in Idlib to Prepare for Final Stage of False Flag Chemical Attack. Coming from the Russians, and that's the reason why many people reflexively dismiss this, or just the fact that it comes from RT. But as many of you know, is not the way to do anything. Look at everything, question everything, but reflexively dismissing anything is exactly what they want. And it's the reality, as we always point out, is we have evidence coming from one side and bland, faceless claims coming from the other side with nothing to back them up. Loads and loads of evidence we have, but we can't show you. Come to your own conclusions, as always. This is an important story. So the Russian military has obtained irrefutable data. They claim that terrorist groups, including Jabhat al-Nusra and the infamous White Helmets, met in Idlib province on Sunday, according to the ministry spokesperson Igor Konechnikov. Now, we know very clearly that al-Nusra is a terrorist group. This is recognized by the United States government. We know very clearly that the White Helmets have been involved with al-Nusra specifically in the past, staging false flags that are now verified, as far as I'm concerned. Interesting development. Now, it reveals that the information they have, the irrefutable evidence they claim, some of which before the chemicals, the chlorine information, they've already given to the United Nations and the United States. But this new information reveals that the militants have plotted chemical attacks for the final attacks upcoming by the Syrian army, likely in Idlib, and are expected to make on Western-backed extremist held areas. Idlib and the other places that they're discussing, and the recent rise in media coverage by the West. The statements come after earlier warnings from Moscow that militants are preparing to stage a chemical attack in the Syrian province to give the Western coalition a pretext to strike Syria. In August, the defense ministry said that 8 canisters of chlorine had been delivered to a village near Jashir al-Shughur city, and that a foreign-trained group of militants also had arrived in the area to simulate a rescue operation after the staged attack. The U.S. and its allies have repeatedly stressed its readiness to strike Syria if any attack takes place. Any attack, ignoring all the Russians' warnings. Washington's envoy to UN, Nikki Haley, recently said that she already knows the perpetrators in case a chemical incident attack takes place in Syria. Already knows. Very interesting and very revealing, as we pointed out many times over, that even if it's likely that it's the Russians or the Syrians, for them to just blanket statement say, regardless, we already know what's happening. And maybe they have some kind of behind-the-scenes intelligence, but guess what? They failed to show anyone, not just the people of America, but the United Nations, or anybody for that matter. And even the past, places like Douma, which they said they had irrefutable evidence, which turns out was not true, which we now know. So keeping that in mind with this, we should automatically say they're probably lying to us based on their past actions. Very revealing. Now, I have a couple clips I wanted to show you about a video that was in this article that shows a couple of important things. The first one, and again, this is coming from RT, so for those that want to reflexively dismiss it, come to your own conclusions, as always, but there's evidence more than just this, as in people on the ground, like Eva Bartlett and Vanessa Bealey, Eva, which I have an interview set up for next week, on the ground verifying these claims themselves. So this is not just propaganda coming from a Russian station. This is verified information, but showing the first one, showing that the Syrians and the Russians are in fact evacuating civilians from these areas and not using them like shields and trying to kill the civilians with gas like the Western is forcefully, aggressively putting in your face, showing you that they're in fact evacuating people from these areas and then getting actual statements from the people on the ground. And they say, oh God, thank you. We've been rescued from the extremists. So watch for yourself. And the next one I'll get to in a second, but this one's important to check out.
The militants were holding us as hostages. It was cold in our camp in winter and deadly hot in summer. This humanitarian corridor is our salvation.
I am from Idlib. Conditions were dire there. The militants don't let anyone go. We escaped with just the clothes on our backs. The main illnesses here are respiratory infections, gastric distress, and arthritis. We give people medicine, recommendations, and refer them to hospital if necessary.
Controlling Idlib is militant group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, formerly known as al-Nusra or as al-Qaeda in Syria. The group is viewed by Russia and America as a terrorist organization and has carried out a number of atrocities. The group's chief has warned all other factions against taking part in any talks with Damascus.
So could this be a grand deception by the Syrians and the Russians? Of course, of course. Except for the fact that we have people on the ground currently, American journalists, real journalists, actually confirming that this is the state of things. So understand that. For those in this show regulars, most likely you already know this, but there's many out there that would reflexively dismiss this just because it's coming from the Russians. Similar to the next video that I'm about to show you, coming from the same woman from the UK, just simply saying, well, because it's the Russians, we know it's a lie. As if talking to you like you're a six-year-old, as if that should make sense to you. These are the bad guys, so that means that's a lie, and that's it. Point blank. Very revealing. But the point is that what we're seeing there is the Syrians and the Russians giving medical care and evacuating children and elderly, not the very terrorist, maniacal, evil dictators they're making them out to be. Again, not to ever say that these people in government positions are just the most amazing people in the world and these are bastions of freedom and liberty. Never is that the claim. It's never that polarized. People in government, as you know in this show, I think are largely corrupt and deceive people for a matter of practice. That's what they do in their jobs in government. However, what we're seeing right now very clearly is that these people are not what they're being made out to be by the Western media. Why? Because there's a political agenda at play. And if you want to know more about that, I've got many videos in our archives that show overwhelming evidence to support that very claim. So for the next video, showing you, of course, what they're saying in the United Nations, where Russia comes to the table and says very logical things. Why would we do this? Why would we carry out a chemical attack and draw the attacks from three major nations that are just frothing at the mouth, ready to attack us? Why would we do that? We don't even have chemical weapons. And then, of course, well, I'll let you watch it and we can talk about it afterward.
Syrian armed forces have no chemical weapons and no plans to use them. There is no military necessity for it. We've said this many times before.
It is not enough for the Russians to assert that the Syrians have no chemical weapons. There are very many inaccuracies and inconsistencies.
Sensible people will not use militarily useless means to draw the fire of three powerful countries upon themselves.
We have no information about chlorine being delivered, and therefore, if the Russian ministry does have that, the most probable explanation is that it is a preemptive attempt to set the agenda and the narrative for an appalling attack to come.
To consider it as an invitation to the armed rebel groups to stage another chemical attack as they did it in Eastern Ghouta, Duma.
It's very clear to us and our partners that this is an effort to distract from an imminent attack on Idlib.
All of these same tired claims are predicated on the concept of the West's moral superiority, their moral authority, that we're the good guys. And this is their long playbook of manipulating us so they can carry out, like Caitlin says, the strategic effort of murdering a few children with some gas bombs, just in order to draw the attack of the very people they're about to push out of their country. It just, any critically thinking person with a few brain cells to rub together can see very clearly the logic on one side. Could it be possible that these people are just maniacs just waiting for exact purpose, any possible reason to carry out a chemical attack the moment that they're about to win? Sure, anything is possible. Of course, I'm willing to accept that possibility. But based on the past, based on the journalists on the ground, based on many, many different things that we could fill an entire show with, in which I have in the past, show us that this is very clearly not the case. Very, very clearly. And these people continue to push this forward based on the simple logic that Russia's the bad guy. So if they're saying this, that's not the truth. Very juvenile. It's an incredibly, incredibly childish. But people want to buy it because they don't want to admit to themselves that these leaders are misleading them for political reasons, for selfish reasons, for geopolitical reasons. But it's not the case. And hopefully you can see that. But as always, come to your own conclusions. For the next article, this one also related, this one coming from South Front, a few good articles from South Front today. This one entitled, Syrian Army Makes New Gains North of Al-Suwaida and Finds U.S.-Made Weapons. Again. For the umpteenth time this has happened, where guess what? They take back territory from the extremists and find caches of Israeli weapons and U.S. weapons. Of course, people make the claim, well, of course, they could have left them there. They could have found them. They tend to leave their weaponry when they move on, which is ridiculous anyway. All the money we spend and our tax dollars, they just leave Humvees and weapons, and they do that. But either way, the reality is that these whether intentional or accidental, the United States and Israel are, in fact, arming these extremists. So either they're inept and incompetent and literally giving weapons to the very people they pretend to fight, or, in fact, they're intentionally arming and supporting and funding and protecting the extremists on the ground. I think you know what I think. So on September 7th, the Syrian Arab Army captured several ISIS-held positions following heavy clashes with ISIS fighters on the ground. During its advance, the SSA found a U.S.-made M2 Browning machine gun, which I have an image for you here. You can take a peek for yourself very clearly with the markings, the very one he's using there to the right. Which was, this had been used with ISIS fighters in Al-Safa. The same type of machine gun is used, in fact, by U.S.-backed Free Syrian Army, the groups, the U.S.-led coalition near the Al-Tanf base. Very interesting how this continues to happen. The very same weapons. We just reported on this in a different location. Stamped with the U.S. of approval. This is not the first time. This is more times than I can possibly count that we've had evidence. In fact, that they were given to them with receipts and everything from the American government. But this is just another example of these very people, these ISIS fighters on the ground using these. It should not be surprising to us. And in a related story, another one coming from South Front, this one entitled, Captured ISIS Member Claims U.S.-Led Coalition Indirectly Supports 1,500 Terrorists in Syrian Desert. Again, to just in case you would think, well, maybe these weapons accidentally ended up in the hands of these fighters, or maybe this is a misunderstanding, or maybe they took them from people. But here's a person one of many. In addition, like I point out, the journalists on the ground reporting these all the facts that we know. But this is just one more example of someone being caught, an ISIS fighter, admitting that they are in fact being funded and helped and protected by the U.S. coalition. So a video has been released by a local news organization showing an interrogation of an ISIS member captured by government troops in the desert near the of central Syria. According to the released video, the captured ISIS member, like his name is Abu Ayyib al-Araki, if I'm saying that correctly, claimed that a total number of ISIS members in the Damascus desert is about 1,500. And some of them had been trained and supplied with weapons by the U.S. coalition forces. Furthermore, he claimed that the al-Rubhak refugee camp, controlled by the U.S.-led coalition, is in fact used by terrorists as a rear base, something we've continued to point out. Protected. Not just funded, supported, armed, but protected. This corroborates previous statements by the Russian military that the U.S.-led coalition is using the Al-Tamp zone, including the Rubhak refugee camp, as a buffer zone, allowing ISIS terrorists to carry out attacks on facilities in the Damascus government. We've many times, Syrian Analysis reported this, I've reported this more times than I can count, literally allowing them to dance back and forth and attack Syrian forces and then run back and hide behind the legs of the U.S., behind the legs of their parent as they attack any Syrian forces that try to run back and fight them. It's blatant. And now we even have admissions from an ISIS fighter who was kidnapped. But of course, anything could be fabricated. But when we begin to have just so many overflowing examples of evidence that we can just go, well, that's just probably made up. Oh, that's just probably made up. And then nothing on the other side of the argument besides claims with nothing to back them up. We have to begin to ask ourselves, how much can we continue to ignore while they're giving us nothing on the other side? And in a very interesting and related article coming from Antimedia in regard to Al-Tamp and something that just recently happened, this one entitled U.S. Military Issues Chilling Live Fire Warning to Russian Troops in Syria. So following Thursday's report that Russia had recently informed the U.S. of planned military operations against terrorist groups on the Syria-Jordan border, a company of U.S. Marines conducted a live fire exercise in the same area. Officials say it was intended to be a warning to Russia. Interesting how they always say these exercises are just natural, but never warnings. But then when they want them to be warnings, they're warnings. The exercise took place near the U.S. base at Al-Tamp, at the corner of Syria's border with Iraq and Jordan, a very important geostrategic point in Syria. Though the U.S. no longer really has any rebel allies in this area, which was the initial point of the Al-Tamp base, the U.S. does regularly attack any pro-Syrian forces who get too close. And that's not a secret anymore, but at one point, this was not the case. We're here to fight ISIS. We're not here to fight the Syrian forces as they fight and attack them and hit them and bomb them. Oops, accidentally, now it's just simply openly attacking them. Again, showing us this trail of lies that just simply change their narrative as time goes on. But if you look back, they contradict themselves over and over and over. The proximity of the very extremist groups that the U.S. pretends to fight, especially Al-Qaeda-linked groups that are on the Jordan border, has almost entirely been ignored by the U.S., right next to them, as we pointed out before. And in many cases, they are even protecting that extremist presence, as we are currently seeing in Idlib right now. The possibility that Russian and Syrian forces might take care of those groups, as in get rid of them, has infuriated the U.S. and led to threats of force, as CENTCOM officials continue to talk up the idea that they, quote, will not hesitate to use necessary and proportionate force if Russian, Syrian, or other pro-Syrian groups get too close to the Al-Tamp base. Pentagon officials are acting as if this type of aggression is standard operating procedure, yet it's anything but, particularly as we routinely point out, since the U.S. presence there was never authorized by Syria. And it is, in fact, widely acknowledged, despite what you may hear from Nikki Haley, as an illegal occupation under international law. Attacks on Russian troops, however, would be a much bigger escalation, and not really something they could casually pass off as self-defense. So in a lot of ways, both in Idlib and Al-Tamp, they're playing this big game of chicken on who ultimately attacks who first. But it is coming to a head, and it's becoming very, very dangerous. But ultimately, regardless of what country you were born in, we can very clearly see who's in the right and who's in the wrong here, based on assertions of fact that have no evidence to back them up, illegally occupying a sovereign nation, claiming to have some kind of right to be there, It's very clear who's in the wrong here. Protecting the very terrorists they pretend to be fighting. That justifies, in their mind, the entire reason they were there to begin with. But now they're protecting them. Hopefully this begins to become clear for people that are new to this show. Moving on to the next story, another one from South Front, another excellent article. This one entitled, U.S. Ambassador to UN gives wild claims that Russia, Syria, Iran seek to kill civilians, destroy schools and hospitals in Idlib. Of course, you should add there with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, asserting these wild claims, which we see over and over and over. Even asserting things that have been disproven, such as the fact that Assad's done this before, when we have Mattis himself admitting that, no, we have no evidence to support that fact. More than once, we've seen people say that, and yet Nikki will continue to say it. So why in the hell does anybody trust anything that she has to say in front of the United Nations? It's a question we should ask ourselves. On September 7th, during a UN Security Council briefing, United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, who sadly represents us in front of the United Nations, claimed that Russia and Syria, quote, just want to bomb schools, hospitals, and homes. Just throw that out there. We know their mind and they want to bomb children in schools, even though our very allies are doing that in Yemen and Palestine. But don't look over there. Look at the guy who hasn't done it and there's no evidence to back it up. He's going to, because we know. That's essentially what she's saying. In her statement during the UN Security Council briefing, Haley said that Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and his, quote, enablers, Russia and Iran, have a playbook for the war in Syria. First, they surround a civilian area. Next, they make a preposterous claim that everyone in the area is a terrorist. Sound familiar? Thus making all civilians targets. That is followed by a starve and surrender campaign, during which Syrian security forces keep attacking until the people no longer have food, clean water, or shelter. She says it's a playbook of death. The Assad regime has spent the last 7 years refining it with Russia and Iran's help. If that is the case, which is clearly not, it sounds like they're taking a playbook from the United States and Israel and Saudi Arabia. It's continually baffling how these people will literally take the things they're doing and put them on other people with no evidence. In fact, we can see very clearly that all of this is happening in Yemen and Palestine and even in Syria at the behest of the United States extremists. We can see these things happen. This is not a hyperbole. This is not a hypothetical. Verified. In Palestine, we see them attacking civilians and shutting off food and water and shelter, and in Yemen doing the same thing, aggressively. The mainstream media, for Christ's sake, has pointed this out already. We have Tulsi Gabbard pleading with Congress to stop the civilians being killed in Yemen. And yet she's pointing the finger at them, saying this is happening. It's mind-boggling that they can even say these things with a straight face. According to her, it has happened many times before, in fact. In July 2018, it happened in Daraa, and the southwest of Syria, where Syrian forces trapped and besieged civilians. In February 2018, it was Ghouta. In 2017, it was Aleppo. And prior to that, places like Madaya and Hama. Interesting how she left out Douma in that, but all of these places, which are in fact the opposite of what she's saying. Again, just it's the globals accuse your enemy of that which you are guilty. Classic propaganda. And blatant lies, by the way. Claiming that these things have been roundly disproven, especially places like Aleppo, where they show when the government takes back control, the civilians flood back in. More, even mainstream media has covered this. But on the ground, journalists roundly show the same thing. They entirely and overwhelmingly support Assad. I shouldn't say entirely. There are plenty of people in all places that don't support the government. But my point being that the vast majority, as I remember, the numbers were something like 500,000 civilians flooded back in when Assad took back control of Aleppo. But she seems to say the exact opposite, despite facts. Just think about that. Again, it's embarrassing that people like this represent you in front of the United Nations, as you can literally feel the people in that Security Council meeting rolling their eyes as she asserts these forcefully as the facts of the case, claiming that everybody stands with us when they really do not. According to her, Assad's government has left the country in ruins. The atrocities, she says, committed by Assad will be a permanent stain on history and a black mark for this council, which was blocked over and over by Russia from taking action to help. Again, just disconnected from reality. Russia has, in fact, vetoed attempts by the United States to do things in Syria, realizing that they weren't going to help. And I think that's abundantly clear by everything they've done there thus far. And saying that they stop them from doing that is somehow stopping them from helping the very civilians that they're bombing, that they're attacking, that they're killing, using extremists they pretend to fight. It's absurd. and that Assad has left his country in ruin. No doubt his bombs to take his own country back from the illegally occupying force has caused some damage. But widely and recognizably, the United States attacks on Syria has left that place in ruin. Reality versus fabrication. Important to understand the difference. She then continued that the offensive in Idlib is about to start. Airstrikes by Russia and Syrian forces have already begun, despite clear warning, she says, of the President of the United States and other world leaders. Again, understand, clear warnings to tell the sovereign, the rightfully democratically elected government of Syria from taking back its own territory from the illegally occupying force. And these other world leaders are like Israel, Saudi Arabia. Vast majority of the rest of the people in this council do not agree with this, other than the usual suspects that support them. But you have to understand how many nations are in these councils. And you have the very few people that are backing these Western nations that are on the same path here. It's important to recognize that. She further reiterated that the U.S. has been more than clear with Russia that the broader international community, quote, we consider any assault on Idlib to be a dangerous escalation of the conflict in Syria. Again, any assault now. If Assad, Russia, and Iran continue, the consequences will be dire. Now, understand how interesting it is that it went from a chemical attack, which has been falling through the cracks. People like us are pointing out that you're a liar, that you're making these things up, that it's not true, and we've shown it from the past. So now they've reverted to just simply saying, well, what can we do? Let's just say anything, any attack they take. Since they're already attacking, that just gives us a green light the moment we feel like we've got enough consent. Very, very revealing. She also commented that the U.S. is also concerned with the presence of terrorists in Idlib. How interesting. However, according to her, there are ways to target the groups without causing a humanitarian catastrophe. You mean like you're doing in Yemen or in Palestine? It doesn't seem to work too well for you already. But the reality here is that they've already said quite forcefully that that's not the case in Idlib. Now, you know, again, contradicting their own claims on the world stage, knowing that they're counting on the fact that the average person doesn't have enough, you know, state of mind to go back and just look at what they said a week ago, understanding the reality of Idlib. People like myself being called conspiracy theorists for reasserting what the State Department themselves have said. She then directly accuses Russia and Assad's government of targeting civilians without substantiating her claims, mind you, with any proof whatsoever. She says, quote, but when Russia and the Assad regime say they want to counter terrorism, they actually mean they want to bomb schools, hospitals, and homes. Yeah, that makes sense, as they haven't done anything of the kind. And she just knows, again, psychic Nikki Haley just knows what they actually mean. They want to punish the civilians who had the courage to rise up against Assad. When the regime calls the brave white helmets terrorists, we know they are not serious about fighting terrorism. That's just one I think stands for itself. When we understand what the white helmets truly are, the funded propaganda arm created by the UK, funded by Western nations entirely, taking the name of the Syrian civil defense when there's an actual serious civil defense. This is, you have to understand one thing that Syrian analysis pointed out, is all of their information, their coats and their hats are all in English. Ask yourself why that is, because it's for you guys. They want you to see it and go, oh, the white helmets saving people from terrorism. It's not the case. They're not the Syria civil defense. They are a propaganda arm of al-Nusra, which we've shown many times over. But the fact that she has the gall to say that, as if it's a fact, is very revealing. She says the United States will not cooperate with Russia on the Assad regime's slaughter of innocent civilians. Again, just continually asserting these things as fact, even though there's nothing to back them up. She also claimed that Russia's requests for an international community said the U.S. to provide funds for the reconstitution of Syria is unacceptable. She translated the claims, quote, they want us to clean up all the roads, bridges, and homes that Russian jets, Iranian-backed militias, and Syrian shells destroyed. The United States will not consider such requests for reconstruction aid until we see concrete results from a genuine political process, mind you. She says genuine, meaning anything that they don't support is not genuine, that ends the war and offers freedom to the Syrian people. And the war will only end when they leave, understand. But they won't leave until they put their genuine political process in place. Very clear when you really hear what they're saying. No, she says, no one else should either. That would be absurd. The U.S. taxpayer is certainly not going to subsidize Assad's campaign of destruction. Of course, because we're already subsidizing the U.S.'s campaign of destruction in many, many, many places around the world. They just really bank on you guys not being able to do your own research. She further reiterated that there is still time to pursue an alternative, citing the roadmap in Security Council Resolution 2254, which calls for a real dialogue among Syrians. Like, that's not happening now. Like, real means what they say is okay, what they deem to be legitimate, and of course, the drafting of a new constitution. Really coming back to the real point, all of that nonsense just so they can put their own political process in place and rewrite their constitution, putting them in control, which has always been the point. United States Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley's claims during the UN Security Council briefing were substantiated by absolutely no evidence at all. It was just one more step in the U.S. fight against Assad's rule, which is seen as illegitimate, as they've talked about for decades. Well before ISIS and civilian casualties, they've talked about overthrowing Assad. They don't want you to know that. They want you to focus on today and the propaganda they push forward. All of this came on the same day, of course, that the U.S. Special Representative for Syria, James Jeffrey, announced the U.S. new strategy for Syria, which we just recently talked about. Remember saying that we have lots and lots of evidence that I'm very sure that they have plenty of things to back up, them over there that told me about this, which is what he said, generally, mostly correct. I'm adding the extra little influx there to make sure that you realize he's basically saying, I'm very sure that they have a lot that they told me that is true. It's ridiculous when you really read his statement. Now, according to it, U.S. military presence in the country may continue indefinitely in Syria until Iran completely withdraws, as well as there being a government different from that of Bashar al-Assad. Again, these are the driveway points. Iran all of a sudden being a pinnacle point in this because of Israel's involvement. We have to understand how this is really playing out. So what's interesting with all of this, we literally now have two sides accusing each other of the exact same thing. Only one of them is accurate. And this is the entire point, as most today in this over-propagandized country will simply fall back into their comfort zones when there's so much confusion, which is what mostly is going on in media today anyway. But all we have to do is look to our own history, people. Look what happened in Iraq. Look what happened in Libya. Look at what happened in Afghanistan. We were lied to, verifiably so. We were lied to. We just saw the report from James Corbett showing us, in fact, that Afghanistan was one of the worst. This started all of it. We were lied to. WMDs talking about Gaddafi and Viagra and his soldiers raping people. This all were fabrications, verifiably so today. And those who spoke out at the time about them being fabrications were called apologists, traitors, liars, or just the usual conspiracy theorists, like we're being called that now. The accused of the other side, the accused the other side of the very crimes that we know they carried out, which is important to understand. They're literally accusing them of the very things they're currently doing that we pointed out on the show over and over. How many times can we honestly allow this to repeat itself? Reflect on that. For the next article coming from ZeroHedge.com, this one entitled U.S. Military Preparing for Options in Syria. Now the next evolution of this, where now we're seeing U.S. literally prepare for battle. Something actually that they pretended wasn't happening up until very recently. And now we know it's true. Again, always showing us that these things, that's not true. That's not true. National security, that's why we lied. Always the back and forth once we find it out. But now we know this is in fact happening. So Russian jets are, in fact, in any way, may not be aware, are pounding insurgent positions in Idlib. It has ultimately begun. And the Syrian army is initiating a ground invasion, which Damascus has described as coming in a phased approach. The White House has responded to the Syrian and Russian bombing campaign by vowing it would act swiftly and vigorously, of course, should chemical weapons be used, and then recently updating that to any attack in Idlib at all, which they are clearly now engaging in. So that's interesting. Using what they've already done to essentially allow themselves to be able to attack. It has now been confirmed, in fact, by Marine General Joseph Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that the Pentagon is drawing up military options to attack Syria and is currently in close discussion with the White House over these plans. White House officials have vowed to hold Assad responsible for any and all chemical attacks allegations that emerge. Allegations, mind you. And France has also indicated that this last week, that it would also respond with military force should chemical weapons be deployed at all, seemingly by anyone. Very revealing. The U.S. is clearly here preparing for an offensive. And also, in fact, purging social media, showing us yet again the very clear coordination between the government, the military, and these primary social media platforms, which should not be a conspiracy anymore. As we can see right now on Twitter, at least, there's a couple that I put together, but this has also been independently verified. This is in fact happening, that right now YouTube has shut down pretty much all major Syrian government channels today, this day, which should make us think something is about to happen, most definitely. And there, this one, in fact, is the showing the image of the background of the YouTube page coming from Sana News, one of the largest Syrian media outlet. Very clearly, they are beginning to shut these things down. They are stopping any independent media response. Anyone that has a different opinion, anyone that has maybe the truth to speak about what's going on. That we have to understand that, and this again, it shows us the reality of the social media aspect in regard to censorship, suppression, maybe like we talked about in the very beginning of the show about what's going on with independent media, maybe my channel, maybe anyone's channel that talks out against anti-establishment, talks out against the war effort going on. Very, very revealing. And ask yourself why they feel they should be able to shut down an entire news agency just because they're operating from Syria. Very revealing. So all that being said in regard to Syria, I hope you guys are prepared for whatever does come, because it seems very clear to me that something is indeed coming. They are indeed preparing for something. And whether that means they just need to get the right amount of consent manufactured, or they're just waiting for something in particular, it seems very clear to me that they're planning something. And all the facts are on the table. You're either choosing to blindly trust one side that says, trust us because we're the good guys with no evidence, or you have pretty much everybody else pointing out things on the ground, maybe even people even in their own administration showing you that they're not telling you the truth. And you have to pick which one you want to choose. It's time we are on the right side of history here, people. Let's move on to some more local news. And this is one, again, that I wasn't really going to cover, but I'm going to follow up on this because this is a specific thing that I spoke out about in regard to the app and censorship and Alex Jones. This one coming from Zero Edge, entitled Apple Permanently Bans Alex Jones from Entire Platform. Also talking about social media and censorship in regard to Syria. This is a very related topic. This is in regard to his app. Very interesting how we now know that the app was taken as well. But there's interesting points to take away from this. Because really, what I ultimately said in the beginning was that the app was left, which I found very suspect, because it did, in fact, by Alex's own admission, drive all of his traffic to his website, and now apparently he's making more money than he ever had before. Was that an accident? Possible? I don't think so. But now that they've taken his app away, that people are thinking, oh, well, there you go. Now there's your proof. I still don't think that's the case, but I wanted to report on this just to show us simply that that's the next action. The app was now also taken away. But there's a few things to include in that. First of all, I want to make it clear that I don't think that it's okay. I'm not a fan of Alex Jones, as many of you know, but no one should be censored. That's a violation of his constitutional rights. I don't think even the mainstream media should be censored. We should simply just stop watching the people who are lying to us. It's pretty simple. But of course, that's not the way things work today, because people are being aggressively propagandized. But here's the important points to take away. Apple's app removal came just about a month after the company removed him from iTunes, and there was the broad sweeping, clearly organized effort to take him away from all these platforms simultaneously, which cannot happen without coordination. So they clearly discussed this, clearly made it happen across multiple different corporate boards. I mean, this is a massive effort. It really was, which also gives me pause on what they were trying to accomplish. But then the point that they left his app was suspect. But now a month later, they took that app. And now we know that this for me is the real sticker, is that it says Apple users who have already downloaded the InfoWars app will not be affected. Interesting. So people who have all the people that they funneled that way, that now he's currently making more money than ever, are still going to be using the app, are still going to be going there. He will not get any new people with the app, but in my opinion, it still did its job. He's now making more money than ever. And people can still seek out and find his website. As we talk about the Streisand effect, people will now seek him out more than ever. Now, Google, meanwhile, has allowed the InfoWars app to remain available to Android users, which runs about 80% of the world's smartphones. So we have to understand that this is yet another step, maybe because people like myself were calling out the app being left. And this is another way to make it seem like Oh, there we go. We took it down. But no, in fact, 80% of the world's smartphones still are allowed to use it from Google. And all the people that already rushed to get the app from Apple are still allowed to use it. So there's just some important points to take away there. Ultimately, I still think this is a bad thing. I don't think anybody should be censored. But we do not need to call for the very people doing the censoring to step in and regulate what we're talking about. What we need to do is begin using alternatives. We just need to stop using Apple, Google, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. There are alternatives. And if people stand up together and begin not to get just leaving these things, yes, that is the way forward, but just start using the other alternatives and we can grow from there. When they have competition, things change. And that's what they don't want to do. They want to make sure these ones are forever enshrined as the only ones. And that's what they're trying to accomplish. So there's a couple of interesting tweets that I want to cover as well in regard to this. Related, this one coming from in regard to the timing of his app being taken down and a release by CNN and Dorsey, the very person who he bombarded and they used as the reason to delete his app, or rather from Twitter, I should say. He says Twitter and CNN's Oliver Darcy both announced the Alex Jones news at precisely 4:47. But you can see the timestamps there. He says, interesting. It is indeed interesting. Showing you very clearly that there is coordination between the mainstream media and these social media platforms. To some degree. That's irrefutable. You can see it right there. The very same moment, the very same minute, precisely the same time. He put up his article and Jack put out his tweet saying we took him down from the app. Very, very revealing here. And this needs to stand out to us. We really need to begin to recognize this coordination between the mainstream media and these at with social media network platforms. Again, for another reason why we should simply move on and leave them in the dust. And on the same related topic, Glenn Greenwald put out a tweet today saying, thanks to those who begged Silicon Valley giants to become roving parents over the internet, we're now inundated with an endless ritual of journalists and politicians tattling on people they dislike to Principal Jack and Prince Zuck, as in Zuckerberg, pleading that they're given detention or timeouts. Now, this one coming from Dan Hodges, essentially saying there's a verified account. Basically, the idea is saying he's talking about an account promoting a campaign for flyers that is racist and against your policies. Is this okay with you? And of course, there's more that goes on from that. But when you realize this, what he's getting into here, first of all, the point that Glenn is absolutely right. These people are tattletaling to the parent figures of the internet now, which is ridiculous. It truly is ridiculous. But when you dive into the tweet that he's talking about, what he's in fact referring to is a campaign calling attention to the genocide being committed on the Palestinian people. And when people probe him about it, he says, well, it's anti-Semitic. The new law says so. Interesting. Interesting how that plays out. The reality is that he's tattling to Jack and saying this guy is spreading the truth about Palestine, about what the horrible things that Israel's doing. He should be taken down. And maybe that will happen due to the UK's new rules put in place. Not technically the laws yet, which he doesn't even understand apparently, but that they have adopted. This anti-Semitism is absurd. Calling out the crimes of a government is not anti-Semitic, regardless of the government. Very, very revealing. And in that same vein of thought, moving on to some more foreign policy news in regard to U.S. allies, disgustingly horrible news, yet again, that's being overshadowed by a lot of things happening today. Coming from Middle East Eye, Israel forces kill 17-year-old Palestinian on Gaza border during protest. The very government that we're talking about here, the very government that guy was objecting to calling out, how dare that person call out the fact that Israel's murdering people, unarmed Palestinians? How dare they? How anti-Semitic? We have to realize the coordination taking place here with all of this. It's alarming. It should be. And that's something that they want to do. And again, understand if we give them the ability to regulate, it's just giving them a government stamp to do what they're already doing. So a 17-year-old Palestinian was shot dead by Israeli forces on the Gaza border on Friday. Bilal Kafaj, I believe is how you pronounce his name. I hope I'm not mispronouncing that. 17-year-old was 17 years old. He was shot in the chest during skirmishes east of Rafah on southern Gaza, according to Gaza Health Ministry, which, again, just by that being the case, many people will just dismiss this, which is the way of the world today, which is sad. They simply because it comes from a certain source, they just ignore it, which is part of the propaganda. Israeli forces had also wounded at least 90 Palestinians, with 37 people requiring hospital treatment. 37 people, 90 wounded. Unarmed protesters. The ministry noted that at least 37 Palestinians required to be taken to the hospital after Israeli forces fired live ammunition and tear gas at these unarmed protesters. Gaza's health ministry also confirmed that 19-year-old Palestinian Hamaj Hamdona died of wounds sustained during July protests. His death brings the total number of Palestinians killed to 172. Innocent, unarmed people. Now realize this in regard to what's going on in Syria and Iran. These people are murdered by their government. If one person such in this type of way was murdered in Syria, it would be all over the mainstream news. That's hypocrisy. Protest organizers said that Friday's demonstration was under the slogan, quote, "We are returning despite your wrath and fury, Trump." And in response to America pulling its funding from the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, Washington, in fact, cut $200 million worth of funding from the UNRWA and demanded the UN Refugee Agency redefine how Palestinian refugees classified. Ridiculous. Just a way to not give them the money. Reality. These people are being murdered. Reality. Shut down by their government. Held in an open-air prison. Very really happening. In regard to what's happening in Syria and Iran, we're being told aggressive lies. It's important that we see the contrast. And of course, in other related news to the U.S. working essentially hand in hand now with Israel, this tweet coming from a representative of our government about a new bill. Today, we introduce a bill to increase U.S.-Israel cooperation on direct energy defense technology. Our bipartisan bill would authorize the DOD to carry out bilateral cooperation with Israel to address threats on both nations. That's kind of scary when you realize what's really going on today. Regardless of the fact that they're carrying out war crimes and violating international law, hijacking boats on the open sea and selling them for profit, this is unheard of. And the rest of the world is calling them out. And yet it does not change. That has to show you the reality of these people in our government. Of course, I will have the link to that bill in the show notes for you to check out for yourself. But we have to realize the danger of what's happening here. Not just with Israel, but that's a big deal with the dual citizenship in our government, which is very invasive. And all kinds of the really overzealous, overwhelming pull that the Israeli lobby has on our policy. The fact that they're working with NASA and the DOD. Very alarming. But in general, with U.S. allies today, looking at Saudi Arabia, as other nations are literally standing and pulling their deals, and yet the U.S. is doubling down. It's frightening. But we need to begin to recognize the true nature of what's going on today. As no doubt this entire video will be censored and stifled because I'm trying to call people's attention to the crimes of these people. But please get the word out. And in the last story of the day, the last but definitely the not least, coming from Mint Press News. After sabotaging peace talks, Saudi coalition launches massive attack on Hodeidah. Now, we covered this briefly when it first came up in the research and review. This is just a truly disgusting story. When you really recognize what's happening here, the way that they sabotage the peace talks, pretended they weren't showing up, as I see it, for the very purpose of being able to carry out these attacks. Even as the world is calling them out for their inability to avoid civilian casualties. In fact, I would call it the aggressive targeting of civilians. As Mohammed bin Salman himself pointed out, we will continue to attack children in hopes that they shiver when they hear the name Saudi Arabia. Those are a quote from Mohammed bin Salman, the leader of Saudi Arabia, one of the closest allies of the United States. How is this not in contrast to what's going on in Iran and Syria, or rather what's not going on in Syria and Iran? Truly horrifying. So the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition launched a massive military offensive against the Red Sea port of Hodeidah. And the new attack is aimed at capturing the populated city. As we pointed out numerous times, a very geopolitically important location, especially as they continue to attack Iran and they may shut down the Strait of Hormuz. This is exactly where the rest of the oil needs to go. And this is very important for them. Maybe why they've held off on their attacks of Iran. Who ultimately knows? But the whole point of this is centered on taking this city. Now, this is despite the warnings by the United Nations and international rights groups all over the place that the move would have catastrophic humanitarian repercussions. But they do it anyway. Where's the United States? Looking the other way. One day before the attack on Hodeidah began, the Saudi coalition, which imposes restrictions on Yemen's airspace, banned the delegation of negotiators, primarily Houthis and the members of the General People's Congress, from flying to Geneva to attend a UN brokered peace talk, which I reported on before. Saudi's sabotage of the talks indicates that the coalition does not desire an end to the crisis in Yemen. As they pretended that how outraged they were that the Houthis wouldn't show up, made sure they didn't show up, as I understand it, even threatening to attack further if they just dared to come. Why would they do that if these were terrorists they wanted to call out? Understand, they didn't want the truth to come out. The coalition attack on the city began from the air and sea and involved, of all things, Apache helicopters, battleships, and ground forces. Coalition militias are comprised of the Giants Brigade and militants, of course, including Al-Qaeda and ISIS fighters, verifiably so. This coming directly from the Associated Press. The U.S.-backed Saudi coalition fighting alongside Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Just like we're seeing in Syria. How interesting. Who have fought alongside the coalition in Yemen the entire time. Military armored vehicles, foreign mercenaries, and coalition aircraft have provided cover for the operation. As always, understand that the U.S. is directly, acutely involved in what's going on here. Picking the locations, giving them air support, fighting alongside them. The attack on Hodeidah comes amidst a third wave of cholera ravaging the province. Over 1.1 million cholera cases have been reported across Yemen from April 27, 2017 to September 2nd, 2018. Hodeidah has reportedly seen 175,075 cases of cholera, the highest of Yemen's governance, according to the statement from Yemen's health ministry. And this entire epidemic is entirely 100% due to the government blockade. The U.S.-backed Saudi coalition blockade of these people. Really let that sink in. Really seems like they're there to help people. These are the countries the U.S. is backing. Blind U.S. support. Even while the closest U.S. allies carry out open genocide, open murder, open ethnic cleansing, and utterly disregarding international law and carrying out war crimes with near impunity, the U.S. oligarchy forces the discussion to be about the countries next to be liberated by the U.S. war machine for committing no greater crime than seeking to act in their own best interests, as opposed to that of the U.S. empire. This despite there being no evidence whatsoever to support the wild and erratic and always seemingly identical claims thrown out about U.S. enemies that happen to find themselves on the ever-increasing list of those deemed the ubiquitous U.S. national security threats for seeking self-determination. In fact, we have countless frank and honest statements by world leaders, journalists on the ground, even Trump administration members themselves, saying the exact opposite. Yet we still have villainous deceivers like Nikki Haley grandstanding on the world stage, in a show almost entirely, mind you, for the U.S. viewer, forcefully reasserting over and over again an easily disprovable narrative. This in hopes that they can manufacture enough consent with false claims and flimsy assertions of evidence without ever presenting anything of the kind to topple the next country on their long-sought list of nations to overthrow. They think you're too stupid to do research, to research their claims. Or look back farther than last week to see them contradict themselves. They think you're too lost in their orchestrated identity politics to see the web of lies they are weaving all around us. Please, prove them wrong. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.